Good morning.
Good morning.
There's things that my glasses just, they're right in the middle, you know? When I began writing this, I thought I'd offer a few encouraging words about birthdays, but that seemed a bit bland. So the title of this is Cheating Death. I know something about this. At the moment of my birth, my mother was in a septic coma due to toxemia of pregnancy. I weighed 3 pounds and change, and the prospects for both of us were not very good. Over the next week, I lost weight, and when the hospital determined that the nurses couldn't give me the round-the-clock care I needed, we were sent home. I'm only here because of the amazing love and devotion of my parents, who report that it took over an hour to get 1 ounce of formula into me. In the subsequent years, I went through the normal rounds of risks that all kids, especially teenagers, go through. As with all my contemporaries, I believed and acted as if I was immortal, and yet, paradoxically, couldn't imagine getting really old, like 40. Sometimes I marvel that my callow youth ever brought me to adulthood, let alone this age. In 1964, I was 16 and skateboards were just hitting the scene. There weren't any of the fancy, famous name models you see today. Back then, we made our own. Mine was a simple maple hardwood plank with wheels made for shoe skates, the kind at the roller rink. Remember those? The board was stiff, the wheels were clay. They would skid in the slightest turn. Well, in front of my house, the sidewalk sloped downhill for a good long block. It wasn't real steep, but by the time you got to the bottom, you were going at a pretty good clip. And at the bottom, the sidewalk made a sharp left-hand turn in front of a wide parking strip planted with ivy and studded with iron pipes and brass sprinkler heads. I was determined that I would take that hill at full speed and successfully negotiate the turn without flying off into the sprinkler heads. It's probably just luck that I didn't bash my head on one of those pipes. And I did successfully make the turn once. I also became very familiar with snails. Protective helmet, knee pads, elbow pads, modern safety gear. What are those? Huh. These kids today, what a bunch of sissies. God. At about the same time, surfing was become the latest craze, and I had to get in on that. I bought a foam blank from a local surf shop, cut it in half lengthwise, inserted a redwood stringer for strength, added a skeg, fiberglassed the whole thing, completed the project, and I was really proud of the result. It was 9 feet 11 inches long, and it weighed almost 40 pounds. Modern surfboards are much shorter and lighter, and surfers attach them to their ankle with a leash so they don't get away from them after wipeouts. I didn't have one of those. And it's probably a good thing, because if that bard had ever gotten loose, it probably would have torn my leg off. All surfers are crazy and have a secret death wish, perhaps more correctly, a death-defying wish. I'm told that drowning is not an entirely unpleasant way to die. Some say there's a peaceful, floaty kind of calm before the lights go out completely. I avoided that, but not before giving the Grim Reaper several fighting chances to take me out. Some years later, I moved up to industrial strength risks. I served in the Navy as a helicopter crewman, and one day, not paying attention, I nearly walked into a spinning tail rotor. Something in the back of my mind woke me up. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Years later, I put on a hard hat. I went to work for LADWP. operating high voltage electrical equipment and hydroelectric generating plants. That work is generally safe so long as you follow established rules and procedures, but it's extremely unforgiving of mistakes. One day when I was a trainee, I nearly walked into a live circuit energized at 35,000 volts. Daydreaming can get you killed. I had a lot of close calls, many of which were of my own making. But to that time, none of them posed the kinds of existential threat that leads to introspection and deep soul searching. That would change. Robert Louis Stevenson said, "Life is not a matter of holding good cards, but of playing a poor hand well." In 1983, I received my first cancer diagnosis, and it seemed I had been dealt a rather poor hand. Malignant melanoma is often fatal if not caught early by surgery. My operation was not successful, and as the disease spread, I began to develop recurring tumors at increasingly shorter intervals. One doctor, attempting to ease my mind a bit and minimize the risk, called the situation very worrisome. Metastasis continued until finally my oncologist prescribed a course of very high dose of radiation, excuse me, which had never been proven effective. But as he told me, when you get to the end, you'll be sorry if you haven't tried everything possible. He advised that I should probably put my affairs in order. So my normal, ordinary life suddenly took a sharp turn off course. Very worrisome, became scared to death. And I wondered whether I would have the strength and courage to face what would come. The dictionary definition of courage is the mental or moral strength to persevere and withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. A lot of people equate this with being fearless, but it's actually almost the opposite. Courage is going forward to do what must be done in spite of fear. In the beginning, I felt powerless, paralyzed by my fear. But after a while, I grew to embrace a variety of strategies that made a difference. And doing something, anything, was better than just sitting around bemoaning my fate. I practiced positive visualization. That's a mental exercise in which you imagine and see the positive outcome that you want. I applied this to the program of radiation I was undergoing. In the lab, when the machine started that loud humming sound that told me that treatment was in progress, I formed a powerful mental image. I saw an invisible hand sweeping through my body, combing out the cancer cells. It was very powerful. And I repeated that at each treatment session. It made me feel better. I formed a daily habit in this period that I still observe today. Each morning when I wake up, the very first thing I do before my feet hit the floor is think about something good that will happen that day. Maybe having dinner with an old friend, taking my wife to the movies. It can be something small, like mowing the lawn on a warm, sunny day and smelling the fresh-cut grass, or engaging one of my hobbies. The only thing that matters is that it be something good to look forward to. And when I do that, it always makes my day better, and I'm a more happy person. Naturally, I sought the guidance of a spiritual counselor in this period and found my UU minister to be very helpful. He said, "Expect to feel like you're on a roller coaster. Don't fight it. Go with the flow." The psyche naturally swings back and forth from hope to despair as it processes threats like cancer. Mine did. Some days would seem for me like that terrifying plunge when all I could do was grab the bar with white knuckles and hang on. But then, after hitting bottom, when that passed, I always had an upswing in mood. In the blackest days, it helped to know that I could expect to feel hopeful, and I did. I was told to be kind to myself. No one can keep a positive attitude all the time, no matter what your friends and relatives say. If you don't have days that are down, you're either in denial or you're not paying attention. Don't beat yourself up because you can't manufacture cheerfulness. That just piles guilt on top of the depression, and it makes it worse. To the extent I could, I tried consciously to give thanks and appreciate life in the moment. On a given day, if I felt good with no pain, I'd celebrate that fact. When I hugged my wife and children, I paid closer attention, and I was grateful for the love that surrounds me. So I went through my days, making the best of them that I could. And after a while, when the tumors stopped coming, I started to believe I would survive the disease. It was a period of my life filled with much personal growth and left me with a deeper understanding and appreciation for the gift of life. None of the doctors can explain why I beat long odds against a known killer. They aren't always right. There's a reason why what they do is called practicing medicine. My wife Peggy had cancer too, about the same time I did. We took turns. She went first and suffered through some truly horrible surgery and radiation while I worked the graveyard shift and got our two children, aged 5 and 7, off to school and then cared for her needs. 2 years later, we swapped roles. We later joked that between us, we had received enough radiation to glow in the dark. And that would have the advantage of saving the cost of lighting at our funerals, offset, of course, by the cost of lead coffins to protect the environment. Sometimes you have to laugh to keep from crying. Peggy passed on 7 years ago, too young at 65. Her pain and suffering years earlier had bought her 30 years of good living, which, in our opinion, was a pretty acceptable bargain. But it took its toll in wear and tear. And in the end, her body just gave out. I was unprepared for the effect on me of her loss. Peggy and I were truly kindred souls and had enjoyed 43 wonderful years together. I entered an expected period of depression, but failed to recover in a timely manner. My grief spiraled downward in a terrible tailspin to a profound clinical depression. As others before me have done, I eased my pain with Jack Daniels, and eventually I lost the will to live. I had hit rock bottom. I knew I was killing myself with alcohol, and I was fine with it. It was not fine with my son, who dragged my sorry carcass into recovery, which literally saved my life. I still don't know why, but something flipped a switch in my head. My spirit regained its will, and every day since I entered the hospital has been better and more hopeful. These are now some of the best days of my life. An experienced counselor recently told my family that he had never seen anyone go as far down the road to self-destruction as I and still survive. My story isn't over yet. A few years ago, I received a second new cancer diagnosis. As with my first cancer, they didn't get it all with surgery. So nowadays, I'm living with a disease that is basically incurable. That's the bad news. But I've been to this rodeo before, and I have some idea of how to cope. And the good news is that my current illness is controllable with hormone treatments, and it's slow growing. So now, it's a toss-up whether the cancer will take me out or I'll die of boredom waiting for that to happen. In the meantime, I'll enjoy my life as long as fate permits. In all honesty, I don't dwell on my prospects. I have no symptoms. I feel good today. I expect that to continue for some years. I learned in AA that it's important to take life one day at a time, so I don't make many long-range plans. Another slogan that speaks to me is, somebody's going to be happy today. It might as well be me. As my mother often advised me, you don't need to borrow trouble. It'll find you all by itself. I'm just too busy living to worry about the future. I'm not dead. I'm still growing, learning, exploring, enjoying my days. In years past, I've made furniture, rebuilt car engines, rewired my house. About a year ago, I acquired a long-coveted skill. I bought a sewing machine and taught myself how to use it. I'm still waiting to find out what I'll be when I grow up. Now, getting back to birthdays. You thought I forgot about that, didn't you? There's a common but unfortunate misapprehension about birthdays. The logic goes something like this. I know I won't live forever. However many years I have left, each birthday means one less to look forward to, so I'm sad. Wrong attitude. In the glass half full, half empty paradigm, that's the pessimist half empty view. There are no guarantees in life. On any given day, you can be hit by a bus, struck by lightning, not to mention the more likely chances of a deadly illness. But the fact is, each year that you successfully fend off your demise is a gift. Nobody promised you that year. You didn't somehow earn it with good deeds like helping little old ladies across the street or rescuing kittens from trees. I love that one. How many times have you seen a cat skeleton hanging in a tree? When you get right down to it, you had no right to expect that year. You really didn't. It was a gift, unpromised, unearned, unexpected. 365 days of living gratis, free of charge. Each one of them, another chance to wake up and smell the coffee, go for a walk and breathe the fresh air, feel the warm sun on your face, put your arms around someone you love. Learn, grow, explore, evolve. Become better than you were the day before. Another opportunity to give your life meaning and purpose by making the world a better place. Birthdays are themselves a gift to be celebrated, appreciated, and enjoyed. And what better way to celebrate than a party with all of your friends there to celebrate your birth and the fact that you're in their lives. Yesterday is gone and can't be changed. It serves us mainly for the chance to learn from our mistakes. We call it the past. Tomorrow is full of promise, but yet unknown. We call it the future. But today, my dear friends, today is a gift, and that's why we call it the present. Blessed be.